Welcome to this episode of the Blended Beat Coffee Grab podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Paula Barnard-Ashton, and each week we have a guest in studio who tells us a little bit more about blended learning and how they're using it in health professions education. The focus of this episode is on deep and meaningful learning and how blended learning can be used in order to create deep and meaningful learning for our students. In studio with us today, we have Yannis van As, who is the Academic and Blended Learning Coordinator in the Department of Family Medicine and Primary Care. Welcome, Yannis.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, Yannis, so could you maybe just tell us a little bit about what deep and meaningful learning is and how our traditional styles of teaching are different to creating deep and meaningful learning for our students?
So I think the first thing is that, you know, the traditional model of teaching is students sitting in a class and sort of absorbing information and most of the time falling half asleep throughout as a result of the length and that they're just not as interested in concentrating for an hour on end. So I think deep and meaningful learning is not that. In terms of that, it's about creating opportunities for students to internalize what they are learning and make it personal. And there's lots of different approaches to doing that. And we actually, in health professions education, tend to do that quite well with, case-based learning, problem-based learning, simulation, virtual patients, that sort of thing. But in terms of how we apply deep and meaningful learning is, so we decided that obviously there's a whole range of approaches that can be combined together to create deep and meaningful learning. But we looked at what would be the easiest to combine together to create, to create learning experience for students both in the online and face-to-face space, and also then linking those two spaces together. So what we basically came up with to develop this framework that's easily adoptable in both spaces is, first of all, focusing on reflection. And part of the reason why we feel reflection is also important, and I also need to mention something around that, is that medical education is moving more towards competency-based education. And I think a lot of degree programs actually recognize the need that we have to focus on competencies. And for students to really develop competencies, that there's two dimensions. They need to develop the competence, but they also need to develop the confidence to display that.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and we feel that reflection helps them think about that, what they've achieved, whether they've developed the competence, and in that sense, it helps them to develop the confidence. So the second component is self-directed learning. So we try to bring in self-directed learning as much as possible, both in the online space and in the face-to-face component. The next component is learning from feedback. We feel that feedback is a really important component for learning, because if you don't know what mistakes you are making, you're just going to continue with them. So we really try to create a feedback culture. But part of that recognition is that we recognize that feedback is not just from the lecturers. You have to create a community of learning. And therefore, you have to draw on that community of learning, whether you get feedback from patients or from your peers, or if you're in the health system, from the nurses or whoever you engage with, that can contribute to your learning. And one of the other things that we try to do is tell our students, you need to ask for feedback. From these people, because some of them might not give it to you. But you need to take agency to get feedback.
And that requires some confidence from the student's perspective. So I can see how that loop between the competence, the reflection, the confidence, and then to say, okay, well, can you tell me how I've been doing, and then what they do with it again?
Yes, and then the other thing from that, what we also do slightly different, but and that's self-directed, is that we use a portfolio of learning assessment. And part of that portfolio is that we have a continuous personal development component. So students can use that feedback, apply Jari's window or whatever the case might be, and then decide which competencies they would want to focus on. So let's say, for example, they got feedback, you know, from a few stakeholders to say that, well, they don't really have good leadership skills. They can then go and look for open educational resources and then, you know, work through those and add it to their portfolio and then reflect on their growth around the leadership component. The next component is real world learning.
My favorite.
Yeah, that's for me also a very important component, because if I think about my own studies, the, you know, there was often times where I asked, but how is this applicable to me?
Yeah. Because why I couldn't, am I doing this?
Exactly. And it's because we don't bring in the real world enough. So we try to bring in a lot of examples from the real world, but also ask students to look for examples. So we might have an activity where they need to provide from their perspective how they would use it in the real world, or how or find case studies or anything
bring
related
their own
to
experiences
that.
Exactly. What challenges are they seeing in their own communities, in their own environments, from their experiences going through school, what have they seen?
Exactly. And that makes it deep and meaningful, because then they internalize what they're learning and they can make connections with what they already know. The next component is collaborative learning. I feel that we co-construct an understanding of the world, with the people that we share it with. So that community of learning is very important. And the other dimension to collaborative learning is that we learn to share, like, value people's perspectives and diverse opinions and so forth, which is a skill and that you need to do, in the workplace. So
the ability to listen, because somebody might have a brilliant idea that you didn't even vaguely think of.
Exactly. And part of that, I think, is also humility to listen. Mm. And those are the sort of competencies that we want students to develop. And you can only do it by actually doing teamwork or collaborative learning. And then the last component of our framework is authentic activities and assessment. I feel strongly that what's the point of asking students to draw a pink unicorn if it's not something that they're going to
even
if it's not something that they're going to need. And I think we also really need to think different about assessment practices, because part of the reason why we have tests and exams is because 20 or 30 years ago and even longer ago, we didn't have access to information anywhere in the world. We are now at a point in time where I think within 2 or 3 years from now, there's not a point on this planet where we won't have access to information. And so the skill set needs to change in terms of what's important is that, you know, like, a lot of disciplines are moving so fast in terms of information that the skills that we need to develop is how to assess the validity and reliability of information, and how to synthesize from so many different sources, and how to make responsive decisions. Because the other thing is that obviously part of the reason why we have information is we make decisions about it. Mm. So how do you make, you know, how are you responsive in your decision making with this information?
So it's less about recall of the knowledge and the content, and it's more about how do you access information, and how do you then know whether it's the right information, how do you make decisions on that information, and then how do you use it?
Exactly. And how do you apply it to the real world problems?
So you kind of blending the real world, the problem solving, and the assessment, but with a thread of creating a motivation in the student.
Yes.
Because they can see it's not an arbitrary thing to demonstrate that I know it.
Yeah.
It's I'm actually creating something that's going to have a meaningful contribution.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's, Yeah, that's what I love about real-world problem solving. Makes them innovative, makes them think creatively. They're not bound by repetition and regurgitation.
One of my colleagues once said that if you can ask Siri the question and it can be answered with relative ease, it shouldn't be in a test and exam.
Yeah, I really love that. But it's true, because that is about just repeating. Yeah.
And that shows that it's not higher order thinking. Mm. And we want to actually assess creativity and assess problem solving and critical thinking, because those are the skills that students develop.
So, I mean, I think that brings me to the question. I mean, it's great to have a framework from a theoretical perspective. But now, what does blended learning do to help you implement your framework in the program?
How we use blended learning is that we basically approach it from the flipped classroom approach, that we have three online sessions. And we also take really good care around the constructive alignment, and I'll unpack that a little bit more, but also around what's put online. Because I think what a lot of people, when they hear blended learning, they think, okay, putting content online is sufficient, and that classifies as you know, blended.
It's content dump. Exactly. Students can access, they can do it in their own time.
Exactly. It's not structured thoughtfully. It's not, you know, like there's no engagement or ways for students to actually engage deep and meaningfully to internalize what they are learning. They
press play and go and make coffee.
Exactly. So what we do is that we do break down our sessions. So we have a very set structure. And it actually makes our lives easy as well. So we have a template that starts with the purpose of the session, the learning outcomes, the activities, then a spark question, which we always start with some sort of prior. So what do you already know about the topic, but in a way that sparks interest, so that they can already start that real world, making connections what they already know. And then obviously the content, and then we also end off with a reflection question and a checklist where students can check whether they've met the learning outcome. So whether they are confident that they understand, you know, how to apply ethical decision making or whatever the case might be. We then use that, and we start with we break down our videos around concepts of 5 to 7 minutes, and then build in activities. So, for example, one activity would be this ethical decision making. Is that I ask students to develop their own framework for how they would apply ethical decision making. So they need to go and think about that and they start with that in the online space, and then they come to class and they need to present their ethical decision making framework to us. And then there's a discussion around that. So I don't duplicate any new content teaching in the face-to-face time. The face-to-face time is about application and discussion, and
it's not reteaching what they've learned online.
Exactly. So I think, yeah. And that also, I kind of mentioned the concept of constructive alignment. So we think about constructive alignment slightly differently compared to what the normal or the original Biggs definition from Biggs is, which is that there should be alignment between learning outcomes, the content that you're teaching, and what you are assessing. And I fully agree with that. But on top of that, there are also two additional dimensions that we introduce in our constructive alignment, and that is alignment to stakeholder needs. So that is understanding the competencies that employers and society would require of a student, and then working back from that to develop the learning outcomes for the program or the sessions that's being taught. And then alignment to notional hours. Because I think people just tend to, they don't actually evaluate their curriculum. Because I think to do effective blended learning is that it takes a design-based approach, and it's multiple iterations and so forth, and making sure that you know, the program that you're delivering to students is the best program it could be. And that does, you know, require you to tweak and make some changes.
Yeah.
So the notional hours for us is also very important. So when we use this template, I would start with, okay, so the session would be an hour online, for example. So I would start with that, okay, the reading. So if there's something that they need to read, that will take them 5 or 10 minutes. So then I put the 5 or 10 minutes there. I then go to the next activity, which is, okay, it's a self-directed learning activity, and they need to go find, so let's say, for example, they need to develop guidelines around how to work in virtual teams.
Mm.
So then they need to go research and find, you know, information about how to work in virtual teams, and then they do that in an embedded Google Docs on the system, and that will take them 20 minutes. So I map that down to make sure that I stick within that. And then basically I use that to make sure that I stay within, you know, that if the course is 100 hours, that I stay within that 100 hours, and also give enough time for thinking and doing, and not just, you know, dumping lots and lots of content on the LMS.
So what sort of platforms do they have? A LibreArch file that they hand in at the end of the year that's paper-based with printed photos and that? Or do you have an online platform? Is it part of the LMS? What do you use for these portfolios?
So because there's a lot of technologies out there, and because students' journeys are different and their interests are different, that they might want to do different things with their career, we give them the opportunity to choose a platform. So we guide them a bit and say, you can use Wix, you can use WordPress, you can use Portfolium, which is part of the Canvas LMS, but an external portfolio that students can kind of create portfolios for employers, and Google Sites, and so forth, and then they decide what platform they want to use. And one of the things that they actually appreciate is the fact that they learn a lot of technological skills as well, which kind of forms part of the hidden curriculum of you know, letting them do a portfolio. And I think a lot of these technological skills are becoming more and more important. So, I don't accept a Word like one of those hard files. That's one thing.
So your desk is not piled with LibreArch files anyway? Or not student-based ones anyway?
No, I want the students to, I want to see videos, I want to see interactivity, because part of sometimes I give them a podcast assignment to do. They now have to, one of the assignments I have to do for the Responsible Leadership and Health course is that they need to develop a 5-minute podcast on something around responsible leadership. And then that's what they put in, you know, on the portfolio, whereas they, like, it wouldn't make much sense in a printed.
Wow. This is my script. So I think that's fantastic. I think giving the students choice is quite important.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned choice a couple of times, and even something as simple as what platform do you want to present your portfolio on, because the students have comfort in certain spaces. Yeah. But have you come across new and innovative ways of presenting portfolios that you didn't necessarily expect?
Yeah, so through this, I had to explore a few. I started doing my own teaching portfolio on Google Sites, and then later on decided to move to Portfolium, because I found, so that was one that I explored, which I thought was a really nice portfolio for both students and staff.
Okay. So, I mean, I haven't used it, so now I'll go and look at it and explore it a bit more. But, you know, I think portfolios are part of that authentic learning and authentic assessment. But I can hear so many people in the background saying, yeah, but it's so much marking. How do you ever get through it? Why are you doing portfolios as opposed to, you can have a multiple choice assessment which is marked online and your marking drops to next to nothing. Why the portfolios? Because it's a big body of evidence. And how do you manage the marking load when you've got a whole group of students submitting portfolios?
So you do need to think you do need to think about that. I think there is a big misconception that, you know, doing effective blended learning, and I specifically want to use that because yet again, the misconceptions are there that, you know, if you have content online and you link some teaching to that, then that's, you know, blended learning. Mm-hmm. And I guess in a sense it is, but to effectively, you know, connect the environments and to create these authentic assessment opportunities and so forth requires a lot of work. So blended learning actually is more work. What is nice about it is that, yes, the setting up the curriculum takes a lot of time. And then the evaluation part and the tweaking becomes a lot easier in year two and year three and so forth, which then also gives you a bit more time to actually invest in the marking and so forth. But you definitely have to develop, you know, effective marking strategies and so forth, because it does require... authentic assessments requires a lot of marking.
But it's evidence of deep and meaningful learning, exactly, as opposed to evidence of knowledge retention at a moment in time.
Exactly. And one thing that I can say is because I've looked at the trajectory of students from first year up until honors using the portfolios, that the first years find it very uncomfortable. Mm. Because they come in, you know, with a mindset of tests and exams, and that's what they're used to. They really don't actually understand the flexibility of curating their own learning journey and making decisions about it. But even at honors level, they sometimes struggle with that. Because for the personal development assignment I mentioned, they asked, but if I decided to move in a different direction and focus on a new competency, do I then have to remove my initial plan from the portfolio? And I'm like, no. The whole idea of the portfolio is to showcase your growth throughout. So if you, the same as how you would provide a rationale in your research methodology for why you're selecting this, you just have to provide a rationale for why you are changing your competency, or why did you select artifact A over B and so forth. And the students, so when they get it, they love that flexibility and that ownership on their portfolio, which also yet again links back to higher motivation, which I think also really makes it deep and meaningful.
Absolutely. So I think kind of my last real question is, so where to next? You know, it's a very innovative environment that you've been creating over the last few years. Where to next?
So I'm currently very interested in AI in education, and I think part of the reason for that is I think the landscape of competencies are going to change. And as I mentioned earlier, from a constructive alignment perspective, we have a responsibility obviously we want our graduates to succeed. And from that perspective, we actually need to consider what employer needs are in terms of competencies. And therefore, we need to have our ear on the ground the whole time. So I'm very interested to think about how do we, you know, get students more comfortable with AI competencies like prompt writing and so forth. And how do we bring that into our learning and teaching? And we've started using some of that, you know, in very innovative ways. But the other dimension for me is, so we're currently developing a new course around person, family, and community. To send students into communities to understand the burden of disease and social determinants of health and communities or you know, person-centered care. And logistics is a challenge. So what we've been thinking about is developing a virtual reality tour where students can go visit a sewage plant and walk around and interview, you know, people in the sewage plant to learn about the social determinants or, you know, what's the impact on health, or go to a clinic and navigate through the clinic and learn from the nurse how the administrative processes, you know, work and so forth. Because I think part of what we need to do better is orientate students to how to navigate the health system, because that's part of their training. What we're thinking about is using AI in the back end, that we would then, you know, interview 100 nurses and feed that into the system. So when the student then asks a question like, you know, what do you do at the station? Or how do you manage a patient file, for example, then it will draw on some of those answers to give the student an answer, and then that they can kind of use to create, you know, their understanding of how the patient journey works, or whatever the activity that we will couple with that.
I think it's really exciting, because the opportunities are that every student can end up with getting a different response, because the generative conversational AI is drawing from a body of responses that would be appropriate, which means that their thinking around the situation would be different, and it opens the opportunity for very different conversations between the students. So those tutorials take on a different tone, because it's not, we've all gone through this same simulation that's been set up in this particular way. We've got a unique component where each student's experience can be slightly different.
Yep.
It's very, very exciting. Just to close, is there anything you'd like to add? It's been such an interesting conversation, but is there anything you'd like to add and anything you'd like the audience to know about?
Yeah, we have a responsibility to, you know, to our students to innovate in our learning and teaching. And and one of the things that we've also, you know, been thinking about is this concept of learning excellence, and what does that actually mean? And what's the role of the university around that? We really need to innovate. So we identified that the student journey is made up of three components. Administration, and I mean, you know, if you think about from a student perspective, navigating through the different clinics and so forth, if they're overwhelmed from the, you know, with the administration burden, then that's going to deduct from their learning experience. So, innovating in administration and innovating in learning and in support systems is very important.
Shifting the cognitive load away from the inefficiencies.
Exactly. So I think my concluding point is that blended learning should about reimagining learning as a whole, not just around, you know, the learning dimension, whether it's online, the combination of online and face-to-face, but that we need to reimagine the culture, the learning culture, our curricula, and the student journey, and understanding, you know, their context and innovating around that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. That was the Blended Beat Coffee Grab podcast. We discussed deep and meaningful learning through blended learning with Yannis van Es from the Department of Family Medicine and Primary Care.